Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon, Thursday edition of the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. We are at stevejonesshow.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, our Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. You can subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast. We are on iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. And you can always access 3 months of shows on our homepage at stevejonesshow.com.
Howdy.
Howdy do, sir. How are you?
Doing good. Doing very, very well.
Same here.
You know, obviously tough one last night. We're going to talk to Dick Girardi on the show tomorrow. I have no answers, to be honest with you, when it comes to Penn State basketball at the moment. And here's why I say that. I strongly felt that if Penn State kept its live ball turnovers down, hit 7 to 10 threes in a game, and played the game with the lead, especially at home, they'd win. Well, last night, they didn't hit 7 to 10 threes in the game. They hit 12. Last night, they played with the lead for between 24 and 25 minutes. The turnovers were reasonable last night. Not that many live ball turnovers, a few. And again, they get to the last minute of the game. Penn State's had 8 games decided in the last minute this season. And they're 2-6. 8 games decided in the last minute. Now, you get to a point where when you're having a good season, which Penn State did a year ago, you know, with 26-13, where you make winning plays. And from about this point on until the end of last season, Penn State made a series of winning plays. Some teams like Mississippi State, they blew out. Utah, they blew out. Ohio State, they needed a 3-point shot from just beyond, you know, in the front court but near midcourt, 35 feet, banked it in, won, made winning plays. And when you're not going right, you make losing plays. Last night, you got exactly the guy you wanted taking the shot, Connor McCaffrey. I think Connor McCaffrey, by the way, is a good player, but he's not yet a good three-point shooter. He's only 1-for-11 on the season in threes now. Well, he takes a three-point shot. Perfect. Missed it. And Lamar Stevens and Mike Watkins go after the ball. And just out of pure effort, I mean, it was effort. They're both trying to make the play, and it turned out they canceled each other out, and Wieskamp got the ball for Iowa, which then eventually got the ball out to Bohannon, who knocked down the three. That's, if you're looking for a common denominator in some of these last-minute losses that they've had, a late three by the opponent has been a huge difference. I can give you 3 examples right away of that. Anthony Cowan, Maryland, knocks down 2 threes in the final, I want to say minute. I think it was final minute. One was really deep. Hey, I mean, he's a good player, good shooter, he's in rhythm. Right? And he knocked down two threes, and Maryland then wins the game. Okay? Glenn Watson. Watson had a fabulous game last Thursday against Penn State. Great game. But Penn State had them all bottled up in a critical possession where I think it was a one-point game at the time. It was a one-point game. And Watson, near the sideline, just throws, because there's only one on the shot clock, one or two on the shot clock. So he's essentially just throwing the ball toward the rim. In other words, if I can hit the rim, maybe we can get a rebound, whatever. But and he throws it up, it hits the flange, it bounces up in the air, it hits the rim, it bounces up in the air, and it goes through. You're like, are you kidding me? Now, last night, same story. A guy that you want to take the three takes the three, McCaffrey, and he misses it. And so you've got two very good rebounders who between them are averaging between them better than 16 rebounds per game. They end up canceling each other out. It goes to Wieskamp. They swing the ball to Bohannon, and he hits a 27-foot three-point shot, which, by the way, is well within his range, so it's not a lucky shot. But again, that made a one-point game a four-point game. That's the one common denominator we can find, is that in these eight games that went to the last minute, now Penn State's 2-6, in three of those games, I mean, there are games where Penn State had the ball looking to tie or win, shot didn't go. DePaul, shot to tie or win, didn't go. Bradley, shot for overtime, wide open shot, doesn't go. Okay, so you've had those. But there's also been these three games where the opponent has gone out and made a critical three-point shot in the final minute that provided the difference in a game that went to the final minute. And again, the shot Bohannon took's not a lucky shot. That's Bohannon takes those shots. I mean, Bohannon's really good. Cowan, the two he hit, Cowan's, those are both in rhythm. One was really deep. The other one was not. Well contested. Contested shots, still made it because he's a good player. Watson, who made several incredible skill plays in the game, that shot was a total luck shot, and he'd be the first to tell you that. He's just heaving the ball toward the rim, hoping it hits the rim so he can keep the play alive. And it hit the flange, it bounced in the air, it hit the rim, and then it's bounced in the air and it went through. You're like, you have to be kidding me. When you're going well, you hit that shot. When you're not going well, you're the team that cancels each other out on a rebound. When you're not going well and you've got a 3-on-2 break, you've got two guys in the same spot, which they shouldn't have been, and you end up getting nothing out of a 3-on-2 break when you got your three best players running the break. Or you have one of those nights where of all the nights, a team goes zone, you make the right coaching move, and you make sure that the guy at the free throw line against the zone, because that's where the zone is most vulnerable, in the 2-3 zone, the most vulnerable area, is the free throw line between the elbows. And who did Penn State put there? Lamar Stevens. And he got three or four tremendous looks against that zone from that free throw line. And he missed all of them. He had a 4-for-18 night. So even when you make exactly the right coaching move, run exactly the right kind of offense, you still need to have the ball go down the bottom of the well. And it didn't. And those are all those little things. Now they got to go to Minneapolis. And Minnesota went to Illinois last night, and they got run out. 95-68. I was shocked when I saw the score. I said, you have to be kidding me. I couldn't believe it. Jordan Murphy is normally a double-double guy. He's automatic. He's as automatic a double-double guy as there is in college basketball. He had 14 points and three boards last night. We'll file that. I mean, I filed that one under, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I couldn't believe they lost that badly last night. Couldn't believe it. We'll talk to Dick Girardi about that and more coming up tomorrow. Also tomorrow, I have to talk to Sean about this. Sean's like, okay, wait a minute, I got to write this down. We're going to try to get Jeff Byers on the show tomorrow to talk wrestling. In fact, I think we may be able to get Jeff on each of the next 3 weeks to talk about Penn State wrestling. You know, they're finally back into the mode of wrestling dual meets. They're finally going to wrestle some at Rec Hall. I know they wrestled at Rec Hall on Sunday.
Yeah, a couple of weeks away from the annual one in the Jordan Center. I believe it's Michigan this year. So.
Yeah, it's Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they'll get a great crowd. You know, chance they'll sell it out, the whole thing. Most of them they've had in the Jordan Center have been sellouts. Not all, but most. So I would expect they're so great. I mean, between Nolf and Nickel and the whole group. Vincenzo Joseph.
Wow, you want to talk about one that has an arrow pointing up is Roman Bravo Young.
Yep. Yep.
Turning
absolutely.
A very fast crowd pleaser, yes.
Oh, I mean, this is a...
People are still talking about that cartwheel move that he made earlier in the season. One of my wrestling buddies is like, yeah, you probably learned that from Kerry Collat. It's like, you sure?
Oh, my goodness. Kerry Collat. Wow. You're bringing up, way back.
Yeah. Well, let's bring someone else up way back from the Penn State wrestling days is Rich Lorenzo. He's been getting some props. He's got a major award coming his way here in the not-too-distant future.
I did so many interviews in my lifetime with Rich Lorenzo. So many. Not only was he had just a terrific coach here, terrific coach, and he was a really good wrestler in his own right, but you know what? He is one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. Rich Lorenzo, to me, I tell you, he treated me so well. I mean, I was just a young guy, you know, and I was trying to promote the sport of wrestling. He was trying to promote the sport of wrestling. He treated me so well. Just a great guy. So he deserves all the accolades he receives along the way. As good guys you're ever going to find in any sport. I don't care what sport it is. In any sport. So it's... But yeah, they've... You know, so I think a lot of people... I think in our area there appears to be some interest. No?
A little bit. A little bit
of interest?
Yeah. Just a smidge.
Yeah. I mean, Mark Hall's having an awesome year. I mean, look at these guys. All right. Bravo Young is 14-1. Okay. Nikki Lee, okay, who was last year's sensation, has quietly gone about his business to a 16-1 mark. Nolf is 15-0. Vincenzo Joseph's 13-0. Mark Hall, who is just turning in an awesome season, 15-0. Shakur Rashid is 14-0. Bo Nickel is 14-0. Anthony Kassar is 13-1. You look at 157 to 197. Right? Five weight classes. They're combined 30, 43 plus 28 is 71-0. How about that? They're 71-0 in five weight classes. 71-0. Imagine being Bravo Young, Lee, Kassar, all with one loss, and really your disappointments. Nah. You have one loss each.
Speaking of wrestling, we've got Shikellamy Seawinds Grove Wrestling tonight here on WKOK. Yeah. Steve Williams will be Matt's side just after 7.
Yeah. Let's see, 101. Okay, plus 13, 114-3 in 8 weight classes.
Pretty good.
114-3 in 8 weight classes. That is one frightening group, man. Penn State fans aren't frightened by it. They are excited by it every single second. Every second. This has been their greatest era. And I think every Penn State wrestling fan has enjoyed every second of it. This is the Iowa of the 21st century. I wonder if they just fill in the records before the season and just say, fill in the names. Nah, he's going to be 20-0. Just kidding. Really, I mean, they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. I mean, there's really barely anybody in their class. That's how dominant they are. There's barely anybody in their class. Which is interesting because Wisconsin battled them, by the way. I mean, let's give Wisconsin credit. I mean, Wisconsin actually won, what, 3 of the first 4 bouts? And then Nolf got a tech fall. And Wisconsin won because Penn State did not wrestle Joseph. Then Hall won. By tech fall. Shakur Rashid then won by decision. Then Bo Nickel won by a major. It's amazing how... And then Kassar then closed it out with a decision. That is some group, man. That is some group to watch. That's, by the way, it's the only loss Nick Lee's had all year, by the way. 2-7-4. He was beaten. All right. We'll take a break. We will come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. All right, Eric Edholm coming up from Pro Football Weekly in the next half hour. Then we'll take your calls beginning at 4:06. I know we talked a lot about wrestling here in the opening half hour today. Jeff Byers will be on the show tomorrow. We've confirmed that. Dick Girardi will be on the show tomorrow as well. Looking forward to that. Then it's off to Minneapolis. 8:30 on Saturday night. And probably coming back Sunday. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, let's bring in Eric Edholm, who's from Pro Football Weekly, joining us for the first time in the show. Eric, warm welcome. Great to have you with us today.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, two intriguing games coming up this weekend where you have the top two seeds in each conference playing one another. Let's start with Kansas City, New England. What has been your early read on the game, especially now it looks like the weather's going to be not much, but at least a little warmer than they originally thought?
And here I was getting so excited about Arctic blasts hitting anywhere but where I'm at in the country, yeah. I think when you just sort of step back and look at the game, you obviously have a blueprint from when they met back in Foxborough in week 6 or whatever it was. And, you know, what struck me in that game was New England's red zone defense early on in the game, held them out of the end zone the first, 31 minutes of the game. And obviously Kansas City struck back pretty hard in the second. But, you know, they didn't mind giving up yards. They were just going to clamp down and force field goals. It was a pretty good formula until things kind of fell apart. And I just don't think the Patriots are going to do everything they can to prevent Tyreek Hill from getting deep, because he's been the guy who, in the past couple of meetings between the Chiefs and Patriots has just lit up this New England secondary. And, you know, if that means Travis Kelce catching more passes or Damian Williams running with the ball or Sammy Watkins or whoever else, I think New England can live with it because the success, you know, it's been there in a couple wins, but they've also given up a lot of those long touchdowns. I don't think they can afford to.
Yet all four of these teams, Eric, all four, in my opinion, are different teams now than they were in early November. And I think that's one of the reasons why the team that scored the most points last weekend happened to be New England of all teams. It wasn't the Rams, the Saints, or the Chiefs, which would have been what we would have thought in September. So who has changed the most of these four teams, in your opinion, and which one has changed for the better and which one's changed for the worse?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think obviously the Chiefs have changed in that they've improved their defense. I think you could probably say the same thing for New England. I mean, since those teams last met, you know, the Rams, their biggest adaptation has been the run game. And, you know, for CJ Anderson to go from, you know, sort of toiling on the Panthers bench, not doing a lot, then being, you know, shuffled to Oakland for a couple of weeks and now to join this Rams team. I mean, he's been a critical factor of what they've done the last couple of weeks. If there's been a negative trend, it's probably for the Saints in their offense and scoring points. They've also had some injury issues, too. Sheldon Rankin's getting hurt last week. You know, Andres Pete, the left guard, had a real rough game playing with a broken hand. So, you know, if there's a team that's maybe trending in the negative direction, it's them. But we also saw how aggressive they were on fourth down. They're playing at home. They still have Drew Brees. Run defense has been good. So they still have a lot going for them. But I think you'd have to say that the lack of explosive plays by somebody not named Michael Thomas could be a bit concerning heading into this game.
You mentioned C.J. Anderson emerging with the Rams. What the Chiefs don't have is Kareem Hunt. How well have they adapted when they were forced to do the right thing and get rid of him?
You know, I think you can simultaneously say that Kareem Hunt is a special talent who's obviously had these off-field issues that he's now dealing with led to him being released by the Chiefs. And you can also say that this is an extremely running back-friendly system, right? I mean, you have strong-armed, athletic quarterback who can spray it all over the field. You have deep receivers. You have the middle of the field cover with Kelce. You know, you have a great offensive line. And Andy Reid, historically, has used backs better than probably 95% of the coaches in the NFL in his tenure. So, you know, going way back to his early days in Philly, getting Deuce Staley and those guys involved and Brian Westbrook and, you know, they always looked for those double-threat running backs. And Damian Williams isn't the talent that Kareem Hunt is. And they love to have Spencer Ware in a full house and everything. But, you know, he's a decisive runner. He's got a little shiftiness to him. And he stepped right in and done a beautiful job. They don't ask him to, you know, sit back there and pass protection 20 times. They're not having him run this crazy route tree or anything. You know, he's given three or four jobs in a game. And he's handling his assignments very well. So this is a player who I think should have a good statistical game if the Chiefs don't get away from him, if they're not lured into, you know, trying to out-duel Tom Brady or something like that. I think Williams will be a crucial part of this game.
What's interesting about Andy Reid, Andy, you know, the way Bill Belichick is about defense, Andy Reid is about offense. He is not afraid to tinker with the route tree as part of his little tweaks here and there. How important is that? Because Reid has actually had some semblance of success against Belichick, and how important have those tweaks been?
Yeah, I think you're right on both counts. You know, he and Bill have a very healthy mutual respect, and, you know, those are two guys that I think can look eye to eye. They faced each other in a Super Bowl, of course, but Bill won that one. Recent years, seems like Reid has had a formula that's worked. And, you know, even in that playoff loss a couple of years ago, I still felt like they played the Patriots about as well as anybody. They seemed to do some things that really kind of bollocks them up a little bit. And to your question about the route tree, too, I mean, if they notice a certain coverage, like if New England is way overplaying Tyreek Hill, putting Stephon Gilmore on him and then putting a safety over the top, they have no qualms whatsoever changing things and going the opposite direction. And, you know, part of what they do is window dressing. They'll show you the same look a couple of times, and then they'll add, you know, instead of a slant, they'll add a slant and go. Or they'll do, you know, kind of the opposite of what you expect. Are you going to see something outbreaking? Let's do something in-breaking this time. So whatever looks they gained in that first matchup, you know Reed is building a game plan based on, okay, we showed him X last time, now we're going to make it look like X, but it's actually going to be Y. And those are the little subtle differences that can be, you know, just a sliver of what leads into a victory.
Exactly. Now, let's look at New England for a moment. The Sony Michel factor. We talked about how well Kansas City and the Rams have run the ball. What has Sony Michel done to help Tom Brady out with what Tom Brady needs to do, because there might be a semblance of balance there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously last week was a great indication that the Patriots can line up and run the football if they want to, right? If they see the right front, you know, if they feel like, you know, they have a numbers game up front, they only see six in the box, absolutely, let's give it to Michel. They have a rare confidence in the rookie. I mean, you have to go back to Lawrence Maroney to find a back that has this many rushing yards, this many attempts as a rookie, and he had a knee injury too. I mean, he was, you know, early in the season wasn't the same guy. That Chiefs game that first time around was really a breakout for him. And I credit Michel for this too. I think he had a fumble, at least one, if not two, early in the season. But he's been really good with ball security. That was an issue that followed him from Georgia to the NFL, had an exceptionally high fumble rate, not the type of back you usually see the Patriots gamble on. They like those sure-handed guys. But whatever they've done coaching-wise, you know, Ivan Fears, the running back coach, one of the best. He's been there with Belichick the entire time. Maybe they've worked on that ball security in terms of how he protects it, how he holds it, that sort of thing. Not yet an established receiver, but James White's got that covered. So they've got a really nice little balance in the backfield there.
There's no question. Now let's get to the Saints and the Rams game. You talk about the Rams running game. How well has Jared Goff played after Cooper Kupp went out?
I would say so-so. You know, I mean, obviously they were able to put up some big point totals along the way. You know, to me, it's been, yes, is it nice having him? Yeah, I think his loss has definitely been felt. But, you know, to me, it's been more that when he sees pressure, he's not the same quarterback than when he gets clean pockets. Now, you probably could say that about, you know,
everybody.
What percentage of NFL QBs? I don't know, 80, 90, pretty high. But there seems to be a bigger discrepancy in terms of, you know, when he has guys rushing in his face versus when he doesn't. To his credit, when they fell behind against the Saints, I think it was the first series of the third quarter off my memory, and my memory's not that great, but still, when they threw pressure at him, he responded pretty darn well. So there have been instances where he's done okay. That was also when they had Kupp, so hard to know how much that factors in. To me, I just think they have to do everything they can to keep a clean pocket for him, and that's really going to be crucial to his success. And, of course, the Saints are maybe a little bit shorthanded up front.
And that's what I found remarkable with the Eagles game last week. I think you go into the game knowing Michael Thomas is the guy on the other end of what Drew Brees wants to do in the passing game, yet he still caught a dozen passes. What has Michael Thomas done in the last couple of years, in your opinion, to emerge as one of the top 5 to 10 threats in this league?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because I really do think he belongs in that department. I mean, you know, you want to put him up there among the Antonio Browns and the A.J. Greens and that caliber of receiver. I'm okay with it, because he runs extremely clean routes. He's strong at the point of attack. He can usually box safeties out or corners out for the ball. You know, he catches the ball in stride, doesn't gear down, has exceptionally good hands, strong hands too. You know, we've seen the body control on the sideline too. I mean, he makes plays like that where he's tapping his toes and being able to adjust for the ball in midair. I mean, having Drew Brees helps, right? He usually puts it in a pretty good spot. But yeah, I mean, last week, I mean, in addition to setting all these playoff records for the franchise in that game, I mean, 2nd and 20, 3rd and 16, 3rd and 13. Those are plays that he converted, either catching it short of the sticks and running past them through tacklers, or catching the ball just beyond the line and hanging on. I mean, those are three crucial plays in that game, and when they were down 14-0 to start. So just game-changing ability. And I think the Rams will do everything they can to try to limit that from happening on Sunday.
Home field is what everybody fights for all season. They want to be that number one seed so they get home field. So Kansas City and New Orleans are the two that earned it. Your experience, in reality, what does it mean?
Well, it is nice for a team like the Saints who haven't, I don't believe, left home since like December 19th, right? So that's going on a month where they've been able to sleep in their own beds, short ride to the facility, you know, mentally prepared, not staying in a hotel, that sort of thing. I mean, you know, they may go to a hotel in the same city, but you get the idea. I mean, that helps. And you know, obviously the crowd noise in both places is revered. I've been in an NFC Championship game in the Superdome and walked out of there, you know, feeling like I just saw Metallica or something like that. So it's an environment. I've also been to, it's been a while, but I've been to games at Arrowhead too, and that place gets cranked up. It's right up there among any of the outdoor stadiums, Seattle or wherever else. So, you know, that factor has to play in as well. It absolutely does. And so it affects your silent counts. It affects your, you know, the rhythm and flow of your offense. You know, the mental torture of going through and listening to this crowd kind of beating down on you for four quarters. So it's a factor, and that's why you see it, you know, historically has affected games for the most part. But come Sunday, once the ball snapped, I mean, some of these guys can tune that stuff out.
Yeah, you know, if you want, we can have them play Enter Sandman.
Hey, so you know, I'm all right with it. It's been a while since I've heard some Metallica, so I'd be down for that.
Hey, absolute pleasure on my part. Really enjoyed it very much, Eric, and your insight's great.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Enjoy the games on Sunday, guys.
Eric Edholm joining us from Pro Football Weekly. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Sunbury Motors is bringing in the new year with a lofty goal. Sell 1,000 new Fords in 2019. You heard right, 1,000 new Fords. SMC knows they can achieve this lofty goal, and here's why. Sunbury Motors Ford has 2019 Ford Fiestas starting at $12,820. That's a new car for under $13,000. Browse Central Pennsylvania's largest selection of four-wheel drive vehicles. Pick from 68 Ford Escapes, and they're slashed to as low as $17,820. SMC has all remaining 2018 Ford Explorers reduced by $8,000, starting at $33,985. Sunbury Motors has over 100 new Ford trucks with F-150s marked down up to $14,000 and Super Duties as much as $15,000. SMC's goal of selling 1,000 new Fords in 2019 will be your gain. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, proudly serving all of Central Pennsylvania and the Susquehanna Valley for over a century.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. We'll talk a lot about various sports, including wrestling. And also, I want to get into Leonard Fournette today. He's on the verge of losing $7 million. And I'm saying, how's he on the verge of losing $7 million? And it's been a rocky season for Fournette with Jacksonville. And they're looking to void his guarantees. An arbitrator is going to rule at a later date whether the Jaguars are able to withhold $7.1 million in guaranteed money, $2.93 in 2019 and $4.17 in 2020, as punishment for Fournette's NFL suspension. They suspended him for a game without pay after he left the bench, ran across the field, and fought with Bills defensive lineman Shaq Lawson in their 24-21 loss to Buffalo. Fournette apologized for his actions after the game and said he ran across the field because he saw Lawson shove running back Carlos Hyde and wanted to defend his teammate. Okay, that's fine. The Jags informed Fournette shortly after the suspension that they were voiding the remaining guaranteed money of his rookie contract because of a clause that allows them to do so if a player isn't able to play for reasons other than a football injury. He missed seven games because of injuries, admittedly let himself get out of shape, was caught on video yelling at a fan at Nissan Stadium in Tennessee. Fournette said the fan uses a racial slur, and acted disinterested during the season finale while sitting on the bench with running back T.J. Yeldon. Tom Coughlin, not happy, and he said that he felt that Fournette and Yeldon were disrespectful, selfish, and their behavior was unbecoming of that of a professional football player. Fournette had 439 yards rushing and 5 touchdowns. And last year in the playoffs, he was dynamic. He had a great game against the Steelers. He played well against the Patriots in the playoffs. But this is now going to, and I'm going to try to draw an interesting line here. When Jalen Smith of Notre Dame got hurt, eventually the Cowboys picked him in the second round. Now Jalen Smith's playing really well. But that started players toward thinking about whether they should enter the NFL draft and skip a bowl game. The next guy that have it happen to him is Jake Butt, the tight end at Michigan. A lot of people thought he was going to be a top 3-round pick. Then he got hurt in the bowl game. So that has had players thinking about not playing in bowl games. Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey were the two to declare right away that they would not play in their team's bowl game. McCaffrey was interesting based on the fact of his family history with the NFL and with college football. This year, of course, we had a much longer list of players led by Will Greer of West Virginia who did not play in the bowl game. And I remember at the time saying, I'm not so sure I would be inclined, and this is what had happened. I said I would not be inclined myself I'd look at some of the alternatives, unless they were absolutely positively the number one, there's no getting around a question about the dude whatsoever, guy. I might go a different direction because I would feel like that the player... Did the player selfishly quit on his team for his own personal interests? And would that follow him to this level as to how he felt about himself versus the team? And that's what I said at the time. This is the part, and I brought this up a couple years ago when it happened. I said, but it's worth revisiting. What's to keep a player now from being on a team that hits the end of October, is 5-3, 5-4, whatever, and says, okay, we can't win the division, we can't win the conference, and we can't go to the college football playoff. I'm shutting it down. I'm going to get ready for the draft. What's to keep a player from doing that right now? I know he was injured. I'm not saying Nick Bosa was hurt. Nick Bosa was not hurt. Nick Bosa was injured. There is a difference. I mean, he needed surgery. He was injured. Now, was it held out that Nick Bosa could have played in November? They indicated it was possible. But instead, he withdrew from school. He shut it down. He left the team to get ready for the draft. Once again, I want to make sure everyone understands that Nick Bosa was injured. He needed surgery. But what's to keep a player, my team's 4-4, my team is 6-3, can't get to the college football playoff, can't win the division, can't win the conference, I'm shutting it down, I'm not going to play the last 3 or 4 games. The heck with not playing the bowl game, I'm not going to play the last 3 or 4 games. What's that going to do to you as a fan of the game? It's interesting. Everywhere I go the last couple of days, everything I get asked about is about the transfers. Players have more freedom than ever. And obviously, a lot of this is for personal reasons. A lot of these guys, they want to start. They want more playing time. And who knows? There may be a couple of them in this 1,000 where they just broke up. You don't know. They may have just broke up with their girlfriend. They just want to get out of there. Go someplace else. But I think that's something that to at least throw out on the table, that it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's not like the old days where you'd have a guy for 4 or 5 years.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.